Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Good evening and welcome to News for the Soul. That's life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Well, we're totally explaining the most unexplained today, I would hope. This is part two in a discussion with physicist and author Tom Campbell. He is back to answer more of the tough questions and give us the most amazing insights from the science perspective into consciousness and beyond. My big toe. That's not talking about feet. He is not a foot specialist. That means theory of everything. You can find him online at my-big-toe.com. And he's here now, so let's bring him on and start the fun. Welcome back, Tom Campbell, to News for the Soul.
Well, it's good to be here, Nicole.
It's always good to talk to you. I was reviewing our last conversation earlier today. I actually had time to listen to my own show for once. And it was quite we covered all the big stuff. Kind of entry into the world of Tom Campbell 101. If anybody missed that previous show, we've got it up on our favorites on newsforthesoul.com, right on the front page there. Just scroll down till you see it. But I guess the biggest claim to fame that we talked about last time was the fact that you had been one of the physicists on the team to help Bob Monroe set up the Monroe Institute and study all of these altered states and get science data and perspective on it, which sounds like it was pretty successful. I guess what I wanted to focus on today was kind of, you know, what does this mean for us in real world right now stuff? What can we do with this information? What can we do with our real world situation? What are we really capable of by accessing altered states or whatever? So let's take some real world examples. For example, one thing that's come up lately is people talk about this sort of veil being thinner, their awareness being higher. In general, has that been your experience with dealing with people?
Well, over what time frame, Nicole?
That's a good question. Particularly in the last couple of years.
I would say that, you know, if you talk to individuals, of course, it's, you know, some are doing better, some are slip-sliding away, and some are about the same. If you kind of integrate that over lots of individuals, yes, I do see that there's some upward progress in general, but I don't know that I would characterize it as a veil lifting. I'm not sure it's quite that dramatic, but yes, it does seem to be turning. You might say the pendulum swinging back again. We've kind of gone through a phase where, I don't know, enlightenment, an understanding of a bigger picture, you know, what reality is about, why love is the answer. That sort of thing seems to have been fading for a while, but it's making a comeback.
Oh, thank God. Well, that's a good thing. Now, what can we do with this? I mean, you talked about being able to get into altered states and modify or make changes in the real world. So, what have you done with that, first of all? Let's start there.
Well, let me give just a little background. The reason that you can make these changes is that we are all, each of us and all of us together, are all part of a consciousness system. This consciousness system, some may want to call that God, others would just call it a consciousness system, but we're all consciousness and we're all a part, some individual part of this large consciousness system. And in this consciousness system, intent is the motivator. Now, all of us being apart, we're all kind of netted. It's like a big, internet, if you like. I call it the reality wide web. But we're all connected to each other, so all of this individual consciousness can interact energetically, can exchange information, and can pass energy back and forth. And the thing that drives this interaction is individual intent. So how can we affect each other? Well, how can't we affect each other? You can do almost anything. Lots of people are into healing. And, of course, it goes by the name of psychic healing or some such thing. But basically, it is intent modifying the non-physical part of a being, which then modifies the physical part of the being. It's consciousness. So you have to understand that we are not physical bodies imagining that we have a consciousness that's evolved physically from our physical body, but rather we are consciousness imagining that we have physical bodies. That makes the problem simpler then.
Now, I know we got into a bit of the explanation last time you were here, but for those that missed that one, like, how does science support and prove that?
Well, the model and theory that I put together in the book My Big Toe basically start with two assumptions. One assumption is that consciousness exists. That's not a big one. You know, we're all conscious, at least most of us are, most of the time. And the second assumption is that evolution is a organizing principle. In other words, things change towards some point. And the point there is that consciousness evolves. Consciousness, and I describe that in physics terms, as decreases its entropy. That means it improves the organization of its information. And just from those two fundamental principles, then all of the physical, physics, and the non-physical, metaphysics, philosophy, kind of falls out as a natural logical consequence of those two assumptions. So that's why it ends up being science. Science basically means you start from some assumptions, some knowledge, and then you do the logical derivation from there and see what's implied.
So you mentioned intent being the driving force behind all of our manifesting. And how does that play a factor then in your research and your intent?
Well, intent is basically a consciousness focusing its consciousness energy in some particular direction. So intent, if you wanted to, let's say, heal a friend of yours who was ill, then you would give that person energy by your intent. Now, you can make that very general, like an intent for them to get better, or you can make it more specific, an intent of specific kinds of cells to change their behavior. One is more focused than the other, but it's basically intent that is at the root cause of changing things. An intent that is very, oh, I don't know, shall we say, not specific, kind of foggy. That's what most of us have most of the time. We intend for things to happen, but it's a very foggy kind of intent. It doesn't carry a lot of energy because it's not real focused. It's like the difference maybe between a flashlight and a laser. You know, they're both just light, but one of them is very highly focused. It doesn't spread out and get weaker as it goes, and the other isn't. And it's the same way with intent. Your intent can be very highly focused, in which case it moves matter rather easily, or it can be very broad and undisciplined and in and out and off and on, and then it will still have an effect. That's what they call the effect of positive thinking, right? You think positive, put energy into your outcome. But that done in a very haphazard way produces haphazard results. So I'm not sure I'm getting to your question, but... you know, I use focused intent all of the time. Eventually, you live in a world of consciousness, and you see the physical world as sort of the background, the props on the stage, if you will. And you, as consciousness, are an actor on that stage.
Well, this is why I wanted to ask you about this, because, you know, most people out there... perhaps before getting on a consciousness path at all, and even while you're on it, it's an ongoing journey of realizing that if we're creating through our intention, as opposed to, you know, well, there's all this sort of pie in the sky positive stuff, and then there's back to real life afterwards because we got to pay our bills. And we go back down to life's just happening to me and kind of really getting this in real world results as far as really changing, you know, literally mind over matter, is, I think, you know, critical where we're going here. We actually have, you know, I wasn't actually going to bring this up, but this is a perfect segue right into it. Every Tuesday night for the last few months, God, it's been months already, we've been doing a consciousness experiment with real world results in weight loss. And this all started because I was having personally a challenge with, as you say, not being a laser beam in my intention. And every time that would happen, despite what I was physically doing, I was having the opposite results that I wanted. And I was calling it locked off, my intention, you know, where it's just kind of going through the motions, but thinking still, you know, about the opposite result of being discontent where I was at as opposed to creating what I want. And literally creating, I mean, quite dramatically so, the opposite result. So it's been really successful in proving mind over matter in some form. But let's use that as an example, because that's a real common one for people trying to make health improvements on themselves using this kind of information, the consciousness, the power of consciousness with, you know, the studies that you've done. How can somebody do that and get that laser beam powerful extension? And what can we actually do with our minds?
Well, there's very little that we cannot do with our minds. We live, our reality here is, our physical reality is really a virtual reality that is projected by consciousness. So if consciousness is everything and we're all part of a large consciousness, then, you know, what can't we do with consciousness? Consciousness is the prime mover. Now, the difference between kind of wanting something and wishing for something and actually being able to make an effect in the physical matter reality, to do mind over matter, as you say, and affect something, has to do with how well that consciousness is focused. And that has to do with the noise level. Typically, when we're just sitting around and being in our normal sense, our consciousness is very noisy. We have all this chatter going on in our head all the time. You know, what am I going to do next? What's for dinner? What's going on this weekend? Where's, you know, my husband? Where's my children? And it just says chatter, chatter, chatter all the time. Well, that is an unfocusing effect on your consciousness. To focus that consciousness, you need to let all that chatter go. And to do that, it takes mental discipline. To get that mental discipline, it takes some time and effort. It's not something that you just, you know, you don't click your ruby red slippers together and suddenly get a perfectly clear, focused consciousness. It takes some effort. The way to start is usually with meditation. Meditation will help you discipline your mind to where you can hold it in that pure state of point consciousness where there are no intruding thoughts, where you've made the noise, you know, kind of disappear into the background, and now you just have clean, clear, focused consciousness. Then you can take that consciousness and direct it toward losing weight, you know, healing someone, or whatever you will with it. So it takes practice. It's not a thing that's easily gotten. Now, some people find it easier to do than others, just like some people find playing the piano, to, you know, easier to do than others. So some have to work at it very hard, but it's available to all. It's something that everybody can do. It's not just the gifted or the people who are born to it. It's just people who work at it. Sort of like playing a violin. You know, everybody can pick up a violin, but mostly we just make screechy noises. After a while, if you practice enough, you can make music. You can get good at it. And being able to focus your intent is the same thing. It's a practiced thing. You have to shut off the noise and learn to exist as that point consciousness. And that takes some practice before you can discipline your mind to do that. And then, you know, it's almost unlimited what you can affect. Now, there are some rules. There's some things that you are against the rules, things that you can't do, things that aren't available to you. But that's not much. Mostly you can influence quite a lot.
What are the rules?
Well, there's some rules in the non-physical reality. I said it's a big consciousness system, and like any large system, it's got its rules. It's got its own way of enforcing those rules. And there are many different reality systems that are inside this big non-physical reality. It's not just like one big place. There's lots of different reality systems. So I have been in a dozen or more, probably closer to two dozen, physical realities besides this one, besides what we would call our universe. There are other physical realities out there that have nothing to do with that universe. I'm not talking about another planet someplace in the universe. I'm talking about other physical realities. There's also many different non-physical realities, which brings us to the point, what's the difference between a physical and non-physical reality? Well, just your perspective, that's all. When I am in other physical realities, this physical reality is non-physical. When I'm in this physical reality, those physical realities are non-physical. Whether something's physical or not isn't fundamental to the reality, it's just the perspective. It's where your consciousness is aware. It's where your awareness is appears to be physical, whether it's, you know, in this universe or whether it's someplace else that from this universe we call non-physical. Now, am I confusing you? Is that...
No, but we're about to hang a list again, because now I can't ignore that. Okay, so when you're in these other realities, other physical dimensions, how are you accessing those?
Well, I'm traveling with my consciousness. It's my awareness that moves. But when I move into those other realities, well, let's say just a simple, near Earth non-physical reality. And that, when I say non-physical, I mean from people who are in the physical reality here at Earth, it would seem non-physical, but it's just a different reality outside the physical. And I call it near physical because, let's say, it's that part of the non-physical that deals with Earth. So you can be there, and when you're there, you're a consciousness. Now, if you need a body there, if you need a form, when I say body, if you need a form there, then you can have a form there. You create that form, and you can interact with other beings there with that form. You can have conversations. You can, you know, tell stories. You can do everything that you can do here. It's just another reality. Now, there's an altered reality that everybody does, whether they remember it or not, and that's dreaming. Daydreaming is another one. These are all different realities that your consciousness operates in. None of them are more or less fundamental than the others. They're just different. But because we spend all of our time awake here in physical matter reality, we kind of think that's the gold standard in reality. That's the real reality, and all the rest of these things are kind of, you know, Twilight Zone-ish, you know, they're not really real, they're just in our head. Well, this physical reality is really just in our head, too. It's a virtual reality.
Okay, so let's go there. How do we know that? How do you know that?
Well, the way you know that, that's always a big question that comes up, particularly when you're learning to get around in these realities, is that real, or am I just making this up? Is that something that, you know, is that really an independent reality I'm experiencing, or have I just got a good imagination tonight and making this all up? Is it a hallucination inside my mind? Well, the way you tell the difference, basically, is by going to those realities and interacting there, particularly if it's one that then interacts with this physical reality, because that's kind of our standard, that's where we start from. And you have to do experiments. You have to do things there that affect this reality here. So when you're able to do things in the non-physical that affect the physical, and you do that, say, 1,000 times, and out of those 1,000 times, you know, 800 of them work just the way your experiment was intended to work, and the other 200, you analyze and you say, well, what did I do different? And eventually, with enough experimentation, you end up creating what credibility in your own mind that indeed what you're experiencing is outside yourself. You get information there that you don't know. And you think, well, how did I just come up with this? How did I just dream up that information? And then later, through other channels, you find that information is corroborated. It's true. Well, how did you do that? Well, it had to come from someplace. And these are just, you know, you have to do this over a long period of time. It's just experiment. Get the results. Try it again. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. What's the difference? Find out how it is you approach the problem. What was your state of mind? What was your consciousness like when it worked? And how was it different when it didn't? And eventually, you get it to where it works most all the time. If not all the time, because you've learned, you know, you've learned how to get around in physical matter reality. It's like if you were dropped off suddenly on a, you know, somewhere in Europe where you'd never been and you didn't know the language, it would take you a while to kind of get the lay of the land and find out what was going on and how to survive. And it's sort of like this in these non-physical and other physical realities. It just takes time to interact with them until you build up enough experiential data that you can corroborate that it's real.
That makes total sense, direct experience and results. That's, of course, what we were doing with remote viewing over the years at David Morehouse as well.
Exactly. That's what you do. It's the same thing. If you don't do experiments and get the experience, bring it back, and then have some kind of evidential, match-up to where you can tell that this is, you know, real, then you could just be, going down the primrose lane, convincing yourself that you're going places and you're not going anywhere. You just have an active imagination.
Can you give us an example of one of the experiments you've done with these kinds of repeated results?
Oh, sure. I've been doing this now for about 35 years, and I do it continually. So it's been actually, 35 years of pretty much every day, you know, doing the experiments, logging the results, seeing what connects and what doesn't. So it does take a lot of time, and it takes a lot of persistence on your part. But early on, when at Monroe's laboratory, we would do there'd be lots of different things. Like one time, several of us would go on these excursions to non-physical realities, and I hesitate to call them all out of body. They are out of body, obviously, because they're non-physical. Anything in the non-physical is kind of defined, I guess, as out of the physical or out of the body, but it's not just out-of-the-body realities are kind of a subset. You can do much more than just out-of-the-body realities. That's just the first place. That's like going outside your house but not leaving the yard. Eventually, then you leave the yard and go into your neighborhood and then go further. But in any case, we would go, several of us, together, and we would be in soundproof rooms, and we would have our experiences. Bob would be out at the console, and he'd hear all of us, and he'd ask us questions independently, but none of us could hear what the other people were saying. Like I say, we were in separate soundproof rooms, and we were all hooked to Bob with microphones, and he was taping all of our responses and so on. And later, of course, we'd come back and run the tapes and see, were we really seeing the same thing, having the same conversations? When we were talking to each other, were we really communicating with each other, or was it completely uncorrelated? And it was correlated. It was very strongly correlated. We were seeing the same things at the same times, having the same impressions, getting the same information, having conversations. So that would be one thing. And we did that many times, where we would meet up in the non-physical and kind of go exploring together and then report back what we saw, what we experienced, who we talked to, those kinds of things. That was some of the early work. Of course, we did healing as well, affecting things in the physical, where you would go and you know, dissolve somebody's tumor, or you know, work on somebody's physical and sometimes emotional issues, and then you'd come back and you'd see, did it work? You know, did that tumor go away? You know, did that person do better? And you can't just do this once or twice. Again, you got to do it hundreds of times, and till you get an understanding of exactly what mental states and what states of consciousness do what. So those kinds of things. Let's see, what else? We would lie in our what he called check booths, and which were isolation booths, and he would write numbers on a blackboard, and we would try to read them from out of body state. We would go to people's houses and see people that they had already given us permission, just to see what they were doing. And we'd say, well, they're doing such and such a thing, and then Bob would call them up and ask them what they were doing and see if that correlated. So that's kind of remote viewing. So with all of these sorts of things, we worked at for, out at the lab, I guess it was about a 5, 6, 7 years out there that we did this probably 20 hours a week. So it was a lot of effort.
Now, when you're doing remote viewing, you have a target, an address, an intention of where you're going out there in the matrix of creation. How in these earlier experiments at Monroe Institute, how did you know where you were going?
Well, the way we would, if it was several of us going together, we would just meet up. The idea was that we would all, go into altered states of consciousness. We'd jump out of the physical into the non-physical, basically an out-of-body experience. Then we would all meet up. And then after we all meet up, we'd go together. So we would just go out exploring to see what we'd run into. And we would just kind of, like a couple of teenagers cruising, the non-physical existence. And as we'd have experiences and adventures and run into things to see and beings to talk to and report back, all of us reporting back separately. So those weren't structured. We really didn't have a place to go. Ones that were more structured, like let's see what, Aunt Susie's doing tonight, then you would home in on Aunt Susie. And not on Aunt Susie's house, but on just the person, not the place. And you'd go to the person, and then you'd look around and see, where was it? Was it a place you recognized? Was it her home? Was she sitting on a couch watching TV, or was she at the movies, or out dancing, or, where was Aunt Susie? And then you'd call her up and find out where she was at that time, and so on. So sometimes we had targets. Sometimes we just wandered.
Statistically, I can barely say it, when you went to see Aunt Susie or whoever, do you know what the results were overall of those experiments?
You mean about how often were we able to corroborate them?
Yes.
Well, that changes over time. If you keep at it and work at it, you get better. It started out, we were probably, we'd have some tremendous hits where we would get it exactly right, and that would give us encouragement to keep trying and to work on the next one. But we'd have probably as many where we didn't get it right, and then we realized that often it's because we were misinterpreting the symbols. When you're in a non-physical state like that, it's not the same as just being in, it's not like it's just a different physical space. It's different. You interpret things in terms of symbols, just like when you read a book, you're actually reading symbols. you're reading symbols when you're in a non-physical space, and it's not a one-to-one correlation with physical matter reality. So a lot of it just, we got better at interpreting what it was we were seeing and what it meant. And that just takes practice. But I'd say we were probably up in the, 90, 95, 98% accurate by the time we've done it for 4 or 5 years.
Wow, that's astonishing. Well, I know when in remote viewing, I went through the mind shift of knowing that I was always at the target. It was just a matter of, how well I could decode and bring back what was there. And but when you mentioned the other ones now, when you didn't have a specific target or goal and you weren't remote viewing per se, you were meeting up. how did tell me how that looks? You're like going out of your body. Oh, there's Bob. I mean, how do you know? What do you see? What are your senses? How do you know that you've met up?
Well, what we would do is that we would intend to all, get together right up. Basically right above the lab where we were. We'd just kind of go up in the air above the lab, and we would all meet there. We would connect our consciousness, so our consciousness would all become aware of each other. We would get to where we were, I see Dennis, I see Nancy Lee, and, we were all kind of together. And then Bob would often lead us. He'd say, see who you can contact. See if there's somebody out there, that you can find who will talk with you. And we would do that, but we would all go together. We'd kind of stick together so that we would all be in contact with each other. Now, somebody would run into someone and start up a conversation, and basically they'd call the others to them, and then everybody would partake of the conversation. Bob would be getting these three conversations independently back in the lab. So that's how that worked, and he would kind of lead it as to where we would go and what we would do and what questions we would ask. So he may say, well, find out about, this. Find out what's going to happen next week. Find out, these other kinds of things and see if you can find it out. And sometimes we could, and sometimes the entity would tell us, no, they couldn't tell us that information, or they didn't know, or whatever. So we Bob would kind of lead that, and we would follow his direction.
In remote viewing, when you're in session, like extended remote viewing, for example, it's stark and fleeting images. It's not like, real. How was that? Were you like physically out of your body and it was real clear as day?
that's a funny thing you just asked me. Were you physically out of your body? again, you get things in terms of symbols. It wasn't just like that you were in another physical reality just like this one and that everything was like it is in physical reality. It doesn't work that way. Like I say, it's in terms of symbols. It's in terms of content. You don't talk with words. You talk with paragraphs. It's telepathic, not linear. So when we would be having a conversation, then you get whole paragraphs at a time. Now, three different people are going to interpret, one conversation a little differently, just like three different people, hearing the same lecture will all come away with something a little different from it, or three different people seeing the same accident will all fill out a different accident report. There's going to be some differences, but there ought to be some pretty major correlations as well. So, no, it's not like everybody is physically seeing each other's bodies and exactly the same thing that we're looking at, but it was that the correlations were high enough that what you learn is that you were all having the same experience. You just interpreted that experience slightly differently. So you had to give some allowances for individual interpretation, as you would anywhere. Here, you have to do the same thing. And then you'd look at the correlations. If you had very strong correlations, then you'd feel pretty confident that you were all seeing the same thing.
You ever get freaked out?
No, never did get freaked out. There's been some other people ran through the lab that did get freaked out. It's not that rare a circumstance, but mostly getting freaked out has to do with fear. Fear there's a great inhibitor of growth, spiritual growth, and of focusing your mind. Fear is also the source behind ego. Fear is kind of the enemy, if you will, in this spiritual path. And if you have fear, then you're liable to get freaked out.
Well, this is why I ask, because often people think, oh, I want to be able to do that. And then when it's real, sometimes that can really freak people out because...
I've had that same experience with other people when I've been in the lab. We used to run lots and lots of people through the lab just to experiment with their brain waves and their ESGs and other things to see if we couldn't isolate some physical effects, artifacts of what they were doing inside their minds. And some people would get freaked out, but typically it's because of their fear. They had deep-seated fears, and well, some people can't get to the out-of-body state, and that's because they fear leaving the body. They fear that they will die. So fear is a great inhibitor. The way you get past that fear is that you have to be willing to die.
That sucks.
when you have no fear, you have to accept whatever comes. And if you're frightened, then you have to have the courage to say, well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to experience this, and if that, you know, if I never come back, then so be it. I'll go on from there. If you can't get to that point, then you always have this fear, and it's hard to get past it.
But it's so important, isn't it? Because that's what's limiting us in all of this. If all of this is an illusion and a virtual reality that we're creating, then that's kind of the main work, isn't it?
That's it. Get by that fear. If you can dump fear, if you can get rid of fear, you will also automatically let go of ego. And if you can dump fear, let go of ego, basically what's left is love. So that's how you uncover the love.
You know, a couple of years back, I talked to Dr. Albert Taylor about OBEs. Are you familiar with Dr. Albert Taylor?
No.
Soul Travels, I think, or something. He wrote a book. He was a friend of Daniel Brinkley. And he was describing, you know, some of the signs and symptoms of someone going out of their body. And as he was talking, I was kind of going, well, I went into fear. Because I thought, my God, that's what that thing was that I had. Do you hear, like, feel the pulling and hear the roaring sound in the ears and all of that stuff?
You know, I used to have more of those kinds of sensations. I used to get a pulsation just before I would depart from the physical. My whole system would be like elastic, like you were made out of some sort of, you know, putty or taffy or something, and these pulses were just running through, back and forth through the system, and my whole energy system, it felt like my whole body, my physical body was just vibrating, just pulsing. And those pulses would be at about, just a little less than 4 hertz. And in any case, that doesn't happen. After you get some experience and you do it enough time, you kind of just slip by that phase without even noticing. So now I don't experience a lot of that, of those phenomena. I just kind of let my mind go, you know, to other reality systems. It's kind of my intent goes there, and it's like instantly I'm there. So I don't go through all that anymore. But in the beginning, I did. And part of that is because we believe in process here, because when you live in the physical reality like we do, we have this intuitive feeling that you can't change. You can't go from point A to point B unless you go through some sort of process. You have to do something. And part of that doing something is those things that you see, the pulsations and the sounds, and some of that is just you creating artifacts of process so that you can imagine that you're somewhere else, that something has happened.
Not real.
Some of it is not real. It's just, you know, when you say what's real, I can say, well, it's in your mind. Well, your mind is what's real. So when we say it's not real, that's kind of a funny thing to say, but it is real in the sense that you're perceiving it and you're experiencing it, but no, it's not fundamental. It's not fundamentally real. It's the kind of thing that is attached to your process, and those processes often then become tools. So you'll have a group of people, and they all do it this way. And before they go out of body, they hear loud noises or see flashes of light or do other kinds of things. And then they kind of train each other to do that, and then they all use the same pool, and they go into their altered state, and then they get the flashes of light going, and then they go out of body. Well, that flashes of light or the sounds or whatever is just a tool then that they use to help focus their mind on the intent of changing realities. It's not necessary. It's just a tool. You could do it flashes of light or noises or almost anything. You know, you could wave magic wands. You know, it's nothing particularly inherent about the tool. The tool is just an aid in focusing consciousness intent. We use lots of tools.
Can anybody learn how to do this?
Oh, yes. Anybody can learn how to do this. This is a part. You are able to do this because you are a consciousness. If you're conscious, I will put that stipulation on it. If you're conscious, you can learn to do this. It's not even a hard thing to learn as far as, it's not like there's this special technique, this special, you know, rituals you go through. That's not it at all. What you have to learn to do is to stop blocking it, is to let go. Your mind's ability to become aware in alternate realities is a natural part of you. You're born with it. You're part of it because you are consciousness. What you have to do is stop blocking it. Let go of the fear. Let go of the ego. You need to get out of the way. And the second thing is you have to do it and work and get discipline at it enough so that you can tell what's real from what's your imagination.
Well, you know, when this happened to me, it wasn't like I was trying to do anything. It woke me up in the middle of the night. It felt like I was being pulled forward at mock speed. And the speed was building. And as it was like, oh, in my ears. Like, it was so loud, it woke me up. And I thought, oh, God, I want that to go away, like, right now.
You heard the loud noise. You heard the rushing. And see, what happens is that you were becoming aware in an alternate reality, in a different reality. And as you were becoming aware in that reality, there's some part of your habitual self that wants to know, you know, where is this? How did I get there? You know,
where are we going, and what time will we be back?
Yeah, and that part of you that is feeling the transition from one reality to another, that part of you then interprets by symbol the feeling of being pulled and the motion and the noise was part of your symbolic message of making a transition to another reality. So for you, it was like making a transition from, you know, sub-sound to, you know, Mach 1.
And it felt more real than anything.
Oh, yes. And it is. I mean, that's why I say, to say that it's not real is not exactly the case. It's real to the person experiencing it. It's just not fundamental. You don't have to go through that.
Now, because I noticed that I would try to relax, and as soon as I would try to relax, I'd go, you know, get pulled forward, and that would wake me up, and then I would try to relax, but I don't know how long I was doing that, but I kept trying to make it go away, like I was blatantly blocking.
The fear would come up and get in the way, and then
totally.
You'd relax, kind of let go of that fear, and then you'd start doing it again.
This is a classic example of, oh, I really want to do that, and then in the moment, you know, holy crap, what's going on? So how can you work through that?
Well, I guess there's a couple of ways. One is to realize that you are a multidimensional being and you are designed to be aware of other realities. It's not going to hurt you. It's like, how do you convince a young woman who's pregnant for the first time that she's going to be able to birth a baby? Well, you say, well, you know, sweetie, you're designed to do this. It'll work. You know, everything will work out. Trust me. It sounds kind of bizarre, but, you know, it's going to work. And you'll get through it, and it'll happen because it's natural. So don't be frightened. The fear just makes it harder. And this is sort of the same way. So you take some solace from the fact that you're designed for this. It's natural. It's not going to hurt you. You're not going to die. You know, nothing's going to happen to you. You're just transitioning from one reality to another, and you're symbolizing that with this big transition feel, which is the pulling and the you know, the motion and the noise and that kind of stuff. That's just the way you symbolize the transition, the way you experience the transition. Let's put it that way. Different people will experience it differently. So you have to just let it go. Say, okay, just let it go. Let me flow with this. Go wherever it takes you. Just let it go, knowing that it's going to be okay.
I think probably what you were talking about earlier, the real essence of it was I didn't know if I'd come back.
Right. That's what people get hung up on, that. They don't know because, see, they're thinking, you think habitually in physical terms. And in physical terms, when you go someplace, one of the things you think about is, how am I going to get back? You know, even if you're just, you know, if you're going to take a vacation, you're going to fly to Europe or whatever you're going to do, getting back is one of the things you think about before you go. It's like, you know, that's just the way we think. So we're in this process, and if I go, then I have to have an equal process to get back. Well, I don't know what this process of my going even is. You know, it's real mysterious to me. How will I know to come back? You know, like if I take a bus to go there, I know I can get on the bus to come back. But if I do this weird thing and just suddenly end up someplace, how will I be able to come back? You know, you'll be stuck like Dorothy. You know, you won't be able to come back. And that's the fear, because it's a habitual way of thinking from our physical experience that we think that way. And you just have to have the courage to let that go. And just go with the flow. It'll be fun. You'll go wherever it goes.
Wow.
If you can't have that much courage, then you basically need to get to a point where you just say, well, if you want to go badly enough, you'll just have to accept whatever happens. If you go there and get stuck, then you'll live there. You know, that sort of thing. Maybe your body will die. But that doesn't really happen. That's just a matter of where you may have to go just to find your courage. You may have to get to that point to find your courage, but there's really no risk.
So the other thing that's happened is, ever since I first started, you know, kind of recognizing what it was, it hasn't happened since. So I haven't had a chance to, you know, try to go with the flow. I'm not sure that I could, but opportunity has not arisen. So how do you instigate that?
Since, now that we've had this conversation, and if your interest has peaked a little, you will probably find you might start having those experiences again. Because you kind of see it from a little different perspective, you're maybe a little more open to it now, your curiosity has peaked, and you may find over the next couple of weeks that it may just start happening. But you change that by your intent. Your intent's in charge. So let go of your fear. Focus your intent on what it is you want to do, and then just go with the flow.
I always wanted to do that meeting up thing, too. That just sounded so cool.
Yeah, it was fun. We were all kind of shocked the first time we tried it, and it actually worked. It was very interesting.
Wow. What is the most, I know you haven't freaked out, but what's the most amazing, mind-blowing experience? Top of the head comes to mind for each one.
Well, oh, see, I don't know. That I don't have anything jumps right to the top of my mind. You know, there's so many. What's mind blowing just depends on your perspective. I suspect that, you know, a lot of the stories I might tell would seem mind blowing, but that, I don't know. After 35 years of experience, there's not a whole lot that
regular day at the office for you.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot that gets into that category that isn't pretty old. But I think some of the most mind-blowing experiences were early on at Monroe, when we just realized, we eventually started to get enough data to find out that it was real. And that was probably the biggest shock to my system, you know, just kind of spending a week or two muttering to myself, you know, my God, this is real. You know, there's no other explanation. Every explanation we could come up with was just as crazy as the next. Well, if it wasn't real, then it was just telepathy. We were all in there lying in our booth. We never got out of body, but we were just exchanging messages, with telepathy. Well, that's almost as strange as going out of body on a trip together. So there was no way to explain it. And when that first hit me, I think that was, you know, that took me a few weeks, if not a month, just to kind of get a grip on that fact. Before, it was just something I was toying with. Oh, this would be fun. I'd like to do this. It'd be neat to experience. You know, you have all those kinds of things. But then when it actually happens and you experiment with it and you collect enough evidence that you know you're experiencing an alternate reality and that you can control, you're operative in that reality and that you can affect things from that reality, it's like, oh, my God, what does this mean? You know, what are the ramifications? What are the responsibilities? And it's just that, I think, was probably my biggest wow, was just discovering that this was not a figment of my imagination. You know, I'm a scientist, and as a scientist, I'm pretty hard to convince of things. And just a few events that happened to correlate, you know, aren't enough for me. It had to be kind of beyond the shadow of a doubt. I had to have experimental evidence, and when you get that evidence, it's kind of mind-blowing. And then you can't turn back. It's like, well, you can't pretend that it doesn't exist, so now what are you going to do? You know, well, the next thing you do is take another step forward and see what else is out there. And how does it work? Why does it work that way? Where did it all come from? And what's the structure? What are the rules? What can you do? What can't you do? Where can you go? How many other realities are there? And you just start exploring to answer these questions.
This is the thing that's so incredible about this. I mean, this is like some of the most out there conversation I have on News for the Soul, and it's with a physicist, with data, you know, to back up what he's saying. So when did your trilogy of books, when did you publish those?
Let's see, it was about 3 years ago. I got sitting right here, I can look into the...
Like, how has the scientific community responded to them?
2003, February 2003 is when they came out.
That's fairly...
Well, yeah, fairly recent. Well, they're not really well known. I don't have, you know, I published them, but I don't have a lot of money to put into marketing, so it's pretty much been what they call a viral marketing, which just means it just sits there and one person tells another kind of thing. You kind of have to catch it from somebody else. So there's been very little marketing, and it that gets you off to a slow start, but it's continually building. And I've had, probably a dozen scientists and physicists. Matter of fact, the last set of books I mailed out was a guy in France, and he also was trained in experimental nuclear physics just as I was. And I run into scientific types who have read these books, and for the most part, where... You know, I get an open-minded look at them, then it's been very encouraging. Most of the other scientists that have looked at them and engineers and other technical types, they think it's great. They say it makes sense to them, and that's because the books are laid out like a physicist would lay them out. It's all very logical. It builds, you know, one concept builds on the next.
Well, we will certainly help get them out, and I encourage everybody listening right now to do just that by going to the website my-big-toe.com. That stands for Theory of Everything, and that's what we're talking about today. I still have more questions. You must come back.
Yes, we always seem to hit just a couple and then don't have enough time to get very deep, but I'd be glad to come back.
Well, this is the thing. If you start answering one question and you mention these most amazing things that I absolutely can't ignore, and then off we go.
Yeah, and then we never really touched the one you really wanted to start out with.
I can't remember where we started now. But it's been amazing and an absolutely wonderful journey with you again. Tom Campbell, he's the physicist and author of My Big Toe, the trilogy Theory of Everything. Tell your friends, make sure you get a copy for yourself. my-big-toe.com is the website. Tom, stay on the line for a moment, and we'll book your next show.
All right.
And for the rest of you, that's where you go. If you missed any of this show or the previous show I did with Tom Campbell or any of our shows ever, they're all free all the time at newsforthesoul.com. So there you go, and we will see you Thursday with the most amazing program that we're going to tell you about, an incredible, totally free, professional, personal development week that's coming up. And so you don't want to miss that. NewsForTheSoul.com for more updates. We'll see you then. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.